Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and this week we'll be talking about dark pools and some companies that use it and what it means for you as the average investor. Hint, it's not good. Please hit subscribe to keep up with this and the latest in FinTech news. All right, let's get going. We have some interesting topics this week. And we're all here this week. No more vacations and saunters around the world, at least for a week or two.
Please don't leave us. Please never again. Do not leave us ever again.
I wasn't that bad.
No. You were great. I hate hosting. That's
leave you alone with Monica. I see. Yeah. I saw him wink a little bit there.
A little bit of
the,
yeah.
Morse code.
So Steve is obviously
never
with us.
Never leave me again.
Wink, wink, wink. Yeah.
And Monica.
Hello, John. Welcome back.
Thank you.
How were your travels, John? How was your special assignment?
Great. I was out researching the whole time, so now we're ready to come back. Went out to Asia for a bit and saw a little bit of the ride-sharing apps. We used a little bit in Bangkok, but it was a lot easier to get cash than it used to be a few years ago. When I went to Asia, I'd have to find a Citibank, which was pretty much the only place I could get my ATM to work. And I think part of that was we have the chips now in America.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
I think that's more compatible with the international systems.
Yeah.
So I think that's maybe part of the reason. But when I lived in Tokyo, and there was only maybe 5 or 6 Citibank branches in Tokyo.
Mm.
And that's the only places I could get cash.
Tough.
So sometimes I was down to my last 100 or 200 yen to use the metro to go to the train stop. And if the ATM was down there, I was pretty much homeless.
Oh, man.
But now much easier and more places. So I thank goodness we've caught up a little bit. I think I'm going to blame the U.S. and not having chips for a long time for
that. That's always a safe bet.
Yeah, I think chips do probably help. But I also find that there are still a handful of banks in different countries that I visit, both in Asia and outside of Asia, where if they're not part of the Cirrus network, we're screwed.
Right. So, yeah, that's right. So for Americans, we have to look for the Cirrus and the star sticker. And usually if there's one, there's the other one. So that was true in Vietnam. But it was about half-half there. So we just made sure we saw that Cirrus sticker. So if you're out and about, if it doesn't have that, it's probably not going to work.
Pro tip.
All right. So... a little bit of an international perspective there. And, I really wanted to talk about some of the plumbing behind all the fintechs that we talk about. We often mention how the fintech has a consumer-facing UI side of things, and the bank is handling the plumbing. But there's a lot more going on beneath the waves. And I like the way I saw one guy explained it, and I think this has been used before. You see the duck kind of smoothly sailing on the water, but you don't see the feet just
furiously paddling
exactly underneath the water. And that's exactly what's happening for, well, almost everything we use these days with technology. There's a lot of genius that goes on and a lot of work behind the scenes to make things look easy. And that's true also with the financial services that you use for stock trading. So we're going to use Robinhood as our example, but this is true for many, many other, a lot of the financial and securities industry, that there's things out there called, the exchanges, which are we all know about. We know the
NASDAQ, New York Stock Exchange.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. ICE, Fortress. Some of these other little known ones too, but they're out there. And we think of them as being transparent. You see the price ticker going with the volumes and the activity going on, and you can tell who's doing what, but that's not always the case. Underneath, there's a lot of other activity that's influencing those prices and volumes, and those are being run by private exchanges, and those exchanges don't tell you what's going on, who's buying, how much, and at what price. So it makes it hard for regular investors to plan. If they know that somebody's going to sell $1 billion of shares, yeah, probably you want to get your trade in, you know, before that, or you want to know that's happened. That's going to obviously take a dip in the price if there's a big sell like that, if someone's offloading. But if you don't know that's happening, that's going to affect you, right? So that's what's happening in something called dark pools.
Which sounds like something that I would learn from by Neil deGrasse Tyson, right? The dark pool energy,
dark
the
matter,
universe, right?
Yeah, right.
Anti-gravity.
Which
we just
don't know what that is. That's another bizarre topic.
We can get into that later. I have a book that I can share on that.
Okay. Well, yeah, a dark pool is just this private exchange. And the reason those exist is because if you are that person that's selling $1 billion in, you know, X shares, then you don't want the world to know that you're coming to the market with those shares, and that's gonna, you know, drive up or down the price, you know, against you, when you do that. There's a couple ways that people take advantage of that. So you're like, who are these people that are taking advantage of the price or driving the price up or down? And that's where we get into something called high frequency trading.
HFT, yeah, HFT, absolutely.
HFT, which you've all heard about. And these are trades that happen in not milliseconds, not microseconds, but nanoseconds.
Nanoseconds.
I mean, as fast as a router and light can move, these guys can trade and spend a lot of money. This is tens of billions of dollars to make sure they have the fastest hardware.
I think they also really key on the fact that they want to have the shortest physical connection to the exchange, right?
The closest distance to the exchange and also the best algorithms. It's no good if you're close to the exchange and you have lightning fast routers, but your software can't make the decision fast enough, right?
So I have to admit here that all that I know about HFT, I learned from the book Flash Boys by Michael Lewis.
I don't know.
It's a high-level view of
I always recommend a book actually called Dark Pools, which is really good. It gives a really good explanation. It gets into the details, but in a very story-like way. I found Flash Boys to be more, you know, it's more of the story, and I didn't understand as much of the underlying technical details.
More people-focused than the process-focused.
Correct.
Yeah, it seemed a bit more people-focused. So, Dark Pools definitely has that, but I felt like I really understood more of the technical aspects of HFT.
So I guess the question for me is, if all this trading takes place sort of outside of the light of public knowledge, right, in the dark pool, in the black box of the dark pool, how does that then affect the market in the public exchanges, in the NASDAQ or NYSE?
Yes, right. It absolutely affects that because, a couple of reasons. First is liquidity. So, of course, you're taking that $1 billion outside of the public exchange where it could, you know, it makes the market more liquid. So if they're buying and you're selling, it makes it much easier. So it's going to offset that price impact a little bit more. Also, it makes the markets less transparent. So people don't know what's going on in the markets and can't make proper decisions, like I was mentioning before, if you're smaller investors. And it's harder to regulate, so you don't know exactly what's going on in a dark pool, although this has been remedied a bit more. They're much more regulated as to what they can do.
What's
you know,
the way
the market.
To, it's like what to call it. It's not necessarily insider trading because it's not coming from an insider of that company, but it is information that you have that you don't want others to have because it would erode your position. And that's kind of capitalism.
Yeah.
And the reason I bring up high frequency trading is because in a public market, everyone can see your trade. And if you're selling a $1 billion of Monica Incorporated,
I think we should use Uber as our example.
If you're maybe there's been some selling there. Certainly a liquid market there these days. So if you sell $1 billion of Uber, it's not like one person's going to buy that, or even one exchange can handle that kind of volume. So what happens is that trade gets broken up, and it's these days everybody's using some kind of algorithm to find the best price and to sell it across different exchanges. So it's going to do that, but one of the high frequency trading outfits can race ahead to those other exchanges once you've made your first trade, bought or sold all the shares available that exchange will take, and then see that you've reached capacity. You're probably going to the next exchange. So what they'll do is they'll put out a trade at the next available exchange ahead of you because they have that faster connection than you. So this drives up all your prices, against you. And they'll take some tiny amount. It won't be huge, but it'll be across a large volume, and they'll make a lot of money that way.
So it's basically they're not buying, say, the whole $1 billion in one company stock. They just buy a few shares in that, and then they sell it at a slightly higher rate, but it's higher by a few micro cents, essentially, right? Because they have the advantage of having of getting to the market before you do.
They'll essentially arbitrage it ahead of you.
Right.
Yeah.
So and they're buying and selling it because they know that you want to sell it.
Yes, right. Yeah, they see that you're trading. They're watching your activity. And they're very, very, some of the best technical people with algorithms and math.
Yeah,
and
you're not going to beat them.
These are top PhD, physicist type people that are creating these models.
Who are wasting their education on this
making
stupid shit.
And making a lot of money doing it.
Yeah.
And you and your Time Warner cable connection aren't going to be able to.
With your E-Trade account, yeah.
Yeah.
With your throttled internet.
Yeah.
Yes, right. Unless you put some very expensive special connection in your home, they're just. And you wouldn't be trading this way anyway. So the difference between your E-Trade trade, which I laugh a little bit about that one, and a high-frequency trader is like the difference between stars. So some millions of times the distance between your trade and what they're doing. They can literally do a million trades.
Your E-Trade account is in another galaxy.
Aww.
Yeah, that's not even close.
Aww. I'm so isolated.
Well, first, that's a good question because that's exactly what Robinhood is doing. They're like E-Trade. They're not necessarily clearing their own trades. In fact, I'm sorry, they're not clearing their own trades, and neither is E-Trade for the most part. They're using wholesale clearinghouses to do that for them. And they pay for the right to do that. And that's how Robinhood makes a lot of their money.
So I have a Robinhood story. Maybe about 4 years ago when the product came out, I think I put in maybe $300 and bought Ryanair and lost like $25. And never again have I messed with Robinhood again.
This has nothing to do with Robinhood, by the way.
It's probably
I made a bad trade. Robinhood.
Yeah. Robinhood is it's the
not Robinhood's fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. I crashed a tree into the car. I crashed a car into a tree, not that way, and I'm never buying a Ford again.
Never buying a Ford again. Yeah. No, but my argument here is that all the evidence suggests that retail investors buying and picking individual stocks is a very dumb idea, especially if you're competing with high frequency traders, all the institutional investors.
It was a dumb idea before high frequency trading.
Right.
High frequency trading just made it dumber.
Right. Right. So don't pick and choose individual stocks.
Well, you're not doing that on a microsecond basis. If you have some faith in some company and over time it's going to do well, then long-term investing is fine. That's not going to affect it that much. But if you think you're going to day trade faster than them, then of course that's not going to be the case.
Yeah.
And this is more like an arbitrage kind of thing, a wholesale kind of thing. So if you're running some kind of institutional fund, asset management company, a foundation, a pension fund, where you're running some of your own proprietary trading activity.
And you are dealing in very high volume trades.
And this is billions, tens of billions of dollars. You don't want to be doing the same kind of trades, getting the same kind of execution as Joe Schmo at E-Trade.
Or Steve.
Or me. Exactly. Or me on Robinhood, for my Android phone.
You're not trading on Ryanair.
Yeah.
Right? You want some crazy good execution. You want to minimize your price impact, and because that's going to affect your returns, right? So to do that, you don't want to take a haircut. You don't want to give it away to these exchanges or high frequency traders. So that's where dark pools started to become offered to these large clients. They're like, hey, let's not you know, that's right. You are paying. Those HFTs are getting ahead of you.
Let's be like Mark Zuckerberg and secretly buy a $60 million estate on Lake Tahoe. But let's keep it real quiet.
Let's keep it on the down low. That's right. So that nobody can bid up that property that you want before you want to buy it. And that's a really good analogy, right? If you want to buy some property, and that happens all the time. Yeah. The railroad's coming down through here. So we're going to buy up all the property and then sell it back to them at a much higher price.
That's how Orlando got developed.
I bet.
Disney secretly bought up all the land. Yeah, because that way you don't have people bidding up the price because they know that this specific person
all the time
needs all of it for some grander purpose.
Yeah, that's a good analogy for
what
HFT is.
Which is also why we shouldn't allow anonymous real estate purchases.
Well, that's a whole other thing too. And that's actually kind of related because you can also anonymize a lot through shell companies and
LLCs
and all that. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. I think
for a lot of purposes.
Famously, and to always bring it back to Trump, I think that one of the things that happened in one of Trump's buildings in New York is that 40% of their occupants were shell companies or LLCs. And the ones that were not were all these Russian types, Russian.
So there were known Russians and unknown Russians.
Exactly. Yeah.
Potential Russians and known Russians.
Right.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to the original purpose of dark pools.
So if you're a big guy, you don't want to get, you know, everybody's coming, hey, here comes a big fat whale and let's get some blubber off of this guy. You know, you want to protect your investments. So private exchanges started offering this service. Hey, we'll make sure that nobody can see your trade until after you've done it. And these are public, you know, if they're a public trust or something like that, they'll announce after the fact that they sold $1 billion. You know, they have to do that for disclosure purposes, but
they don't have to do it before.
But during the trade, they definitely don't want people knowing that, or even indications in the marketplace that's being done. And you know, they're very sophisticated. They know that a certain trade coming from a certain, you know, certain volumes at certain times even will be from some specific asset manager or fund or something like that. They can find these things out very quickly. And they don't need to know to take advantage anyway.
Right.
So they offered this thing called the dark pool. So you could go in there. There's no transparency and make your trade. Neither side sees what's going on except when the press release comes out later.
You said there's no transparency, but you didn't mean that.
There's no transparency, and within the dark pool, when the trades are happening, nobody can see what's going on.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, which leaves you as the retail investor kind of out in the cold a little bit. But, you know, it is a good thing in terms of offsetting some of the arbitraging that's going on against your trades.
And the people or the organizations that are providing the dark pool, are they just taking a flat fee or a fee on volume? How are they getting their cut?
Oh, I think the same like any other exchange, but yeah, I'm sure it's more expensive. I'm below the volume still for the dark pool.
Someday, John.
So if we're thinking about how a company like Robinhood, and this isn't to bash on Robinhood, this is just for us to understand it better.
Well, they lost me money.
All of them money.
Ryanair lost you money.
Ryanair did.
Or you lost your money.
I lost my money, yes.
So if they utilize dark pools, they do that and they pay a fee to play inside the pool.
Well, private exchanges, yes. They're not necessarily putting your trade through the dark pool. But it'll be the same kind of exchanges that offer these wholesale services.
Okay. And then for a company like Robinhood, where, you know, it's still small enough that, like, they're not in a position to sell $1 billion worth of Uber, probably. What is the value to them? How does it profit them to utilize the dark pool?
Or the private exchanges or the wholesale side, yeah. First of all, they're not licensed, they're not a broker-dealer, and they're not running an exchange. So they don't have any of the infrastructure for doing that.
So they already have to use a number of intermediaries.
They have to use somebody else, right, that's regulated, that can do that for them, right?
It's interesting to know that as of October of last year, Robinhood can actually now clear, settle, and have custody of their trades as well. So they're more integrated as well. So Maybe they're getting more into the dark pool space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's probably speaking to how much the fees they had to pay if they're building that there on their own.
Well, it's famously a free trading app, right? So they don't get any fees from customers. They get their fees from the from the high frequency traders in the back.
Well, free is an interesting word in this case, especially. You know, I was out the other day and I heard three young people next to me. And one of them said, I just opened a Charles Schwab account because that's where my dad has his account. And I guess he's the one giving the money. So you're going to open it at Schwab. And the other friend of hers was saying, you should open a Robinhood account. And then she said, we have a little money there. And, and then the friend was saying, you really should open a Robinhood account because it's free. So that the attraction of free on the front end is very very enticing,
it's
right?
It's quite powerful.
Attracts a lot of people.
But of course, Schwab has a lot of services that are free too.
Exactly. There is a price for that. You don't know what your execution is. You don't know what kind of support you're getting. This is a new clearing, settling. This is a brand new. Even if they have their own, doesn't mean it's good yet. So you might have problems with that. There's you don't know what kind of trading support that you might need, advice. We noted that Charles Schwab now offers trading advice free, and I should say investment advice, mm-hmm. not just trading, in all of their branches, which you can go to. I mean, there's a lot of things that go into this that can severely affect your returns much more than any individual trading fee might.
Well, certainly, and many elements of kind of prudent mass market investment strategies are not based on frequent trades, right? They're based on dollar cost averaging into index funds, which you can do for, very low to no fees at a number of different financial services firms.
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I like that there was a fixation on one side on free.
Well,
it could be costing you much more in the end. You know, just one bad trade. Let's say, for example, if you bought something crazy like Ryanair. And that could
foolish.
Be.
I thought it was low. I thought it couldn't go any lower.
And
I thought it only had upside. I'm sorry.
Maybe an advisor at Charles Schwab could have told you, hey, maybe you want to get into something,
buy Delta or something. I don't know. By Ryanair.
JP Morgan, which is a great returns the past few years.
Right.
It'd be a very different story. And that would, it'd be some multiple of whatever the free trade cost was, right?
If only I knew, yeah. Yes.
So let's get back to a dark pool. Who regulates an entity acting as a dark pool? Which, by the way, if you didn't want regulation, you needed a better name.
It sounds like an X-Men name, right?
To
dark
me,
pool.
It's like what's coming out of the swamp.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's I do love the names, too. Even HFT, I just like as an acronym. Huh?
HFT, yeah, that's pretty good.
Who was that masked man?
Gosh,
that was HFT.
That sounds like some lingo for online dating that would go over my head because I'm too whole.
Well, it's a private exchange, so I think people
so
can do
what
they want.
So just general securities law applies. Like you
oh,
just can't
well,
you just can't
yeah.
break the big bad laws.
No, right. Yeah, right. Of course, these has to be registered securities and they have to follow all the same rules. It's just they're offering protection from price impact to large customers. That's the only difference really.
So far what I hear you describing is that the most of the upside to dark pools really comes to their own customers, the ones they're designed to serve, really, really big holders of assets.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And that's going to be your retirement funds in a large pension
mm-hmm.
or...
That's all the money I care about.
CalPERS and all that?
Yeah, my 401k, asset managers, those kinds of things.
Yep. Yeah, right, exactly.
But I'm the lady on the podcast who doesn't own a single individual stock, and I love it.
I don't either. Except for Ryanair, which I sold like 4 years ago at a loss. That's the last stock that I owned.
Well, so the flip side of that is, so if we know who it advantages,
oh, yeah,
who
yeah.
does it disadvantage?
Oh,
so it certainly sounds like if you have aspirations to be a day trader, the rise and influence of dark pools doesn't make your life any easier.
Not at all. It seems like an unfair advantage for the wealthy and the powerful. Or at least those with the algorithms,
what?
Right? Who knew?
Those,
right.
Those don't happen in our society, Steve. Shocking.
At least our universities are still pristine.
Yeah. Yes.
Ivory towers of academia. All right. If you have any other questions about dark pools or HFT, please email Steve at fintechnewscast.com.
And if you want to make Steve bad, ask him how Ryanair is doing. He's going to be so regretful he ever mentioned this.
It's not doing so hot.
Damn those HFT players. And yes, I recommend a book called Dark Pools. I don't get any commission out of that, but it's really helpful, actually.
It never hurts to read a book. That's never a bad use of your time, I think.
Yes. Getting hit by a book, that's different, but I don't recommend that.
No.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, that's it for this week's episode. Please hit subscribe to keep up with our latest episodes, and we'll be back to our regular format next week.
Talk to you then.
Bye for now.